Hello, and welcome to this episode of Better Off Red. That was me checking the microphone. Hello, hello, is anyone out there? This is episode 21. My name's Pip Adam, and I make this podcast, and thank you for listening. First of all, I just want to apologise for there being no podcast in November. It was no podcast November. I'm really sorry about that. I started a new job, and there were some other things going on, and I really, I just was unable to record an episode, so I am very sorry about that. But we are back, and I've worked out how to integrate the podcast hours into my regular week, and I'm just really grateful to be back, and hopefully it'll be plain sailing from here. I'm making a sailing shape with my hand. Beyond a Joke, we'll be back in January with more conversations with people about things that make them laugh and make me laugh generally. And we're going to start the year by talking to some of the amazing people who took part in the Verb After Hours Beyond a Joke event, which was held in November. It was an incredible event, and such incredibly talented people agreed to be part of it. And a lot of them have agreed to come and have a podcast episode. So I'm really grateful about that. I'm really looking forward to it. Just amazing people, and thank you, as always, amazing people. In the meantime, it's December, and over the next 4 weeks, so sort of this part of December and the beginning of January, I'm just going to be sharing a few recordings of writing that I did in 2022. The reason I wanted to do this was that a lot of the writing appeared, a lot of the things I wrote this year appeared at time-dependent things like festivals and other events. And also some of it was published in places that you might be new to you. So yeah, I wanted to also share these recordings as a way to sort of what's the word I'm looking for? Like, just let you know about some of these amazing people doing amazing work around to make it possible for writers like me to be excited and inspired to write things. So this episode, I've recorded a short story of mine, a short story I wrote for an amazing journal, which is called Heat. The story is called Unlock to Ride, and I wrote it after I read an article about e-scooters being dumped. Also in the mix of this story is my ongoing just sadness and anger over the housing market, and also sort of like an ever-increasing anger and just, sadness is probably the better word than anger, over the gig economy and the way that freelancers and people that work for many places are treated. I'm always interested in work. You know that. I know that. And work will always find its way into anything I write. So, it's not, you know, amazing that this finds its way into this little short story that I wrote. And as a slight, life meets fiction fact, also in the mix of the story is the fact that my father worked as an Uber driver for a lot of years and had to give up during the pandemic. It just wasn't really safe for him to work anymore. But no doubt he will be starting again soon. So you might get my dad as an Uber driver. He's a nice guy and a good driver. He's a very good driver. It was so great to work with Alexandra Christie on this story, who is the editor at Heat. Alexandra is just the most adroit a word. I don't know. Alexandra just really gets. What would I say? Alexandra just really gets short story and fiction, and was really lovely to work with. Really lovely to work with. Like, read things that I, just made the story so much better. So, I mean, that's the interesting thing about these stories is they never feel like they belong to me after I've worked with an editor. Heat is published by Gerimundo, who published my book Nothing to See in Australia. And I've just finished working with Nick Tapper from Gerimundo on my next novel, which is called Audition, which comes out in Gerimundo with Gerimundo next year in Australia. So I'm just incredibly grateful to Gerimundo. Nothing to See was kind of scuppered slightly by the pandemic. Like so many other things, you know, I was very excited. It was the first time I was being published in Australia, but there was just no way I could get over there and talk to anyone or do anything or, yeah, and it was just, yeah, it was, I really am grateful that Gerimondo have taken another chance on me and with this new book, which is odd and strange and, yeah, like I feel as, yeah, an extreme risk and I'm very grateful to them. I loved working with Nick editing this book. It was just an absolute dream. Yeah, Nick is one of the greatest editors I've ever worked with and I've worked with some amazing editors. And yeah, he just made the book even better. And yeah, I'm really grateful. So big love to Gerimondo and big love to Heat. I've got a link to their website. They're an Australian literary journal. They have an aim of publishing innovative work. They publish Australian writers, but also publish international writers. They've been going since 1996 and in 2022 kind of relaunched in a slightly different way. These beautifully, beautifully made books, like they're just, yeah, they're perfect bound. They've got lovely bright covers. They're really awesome. And yeah, if you want to treat yourself, I would highly recommend a subscription or even just picking and choosing from the issues that have come out of Heat. I do believe they also take submissions. So if you are a New Zealand writer, I think sometimes we forget about some of the Australian journals, but I really would recommend having a look at it. So yeah, very grateful to Heat and for the story and very grateful to Gerimondo for the novels. I just wanted to finish by, there's a couple of exciting new movements on the podcast floor as far as New Zealand goes. The podcast dance floor, of course, needs to be a dance floor. Flying Fear 2 are about to, I don't even know whether you say publish, broadcast, podcast. They are about to create a podcast and there's about to be a Flying Fear 2 podcast available and that is so freaking exciting. So yeah, just an amazing sort of organization. Their recent festival get together, Talanoa, Wānanga, Hui, was really successful and had brought together some incredible people to have conversations. So, yeah, the podcast will be out around Christmas time. I would say keep an eye out for it. It looks like there are going to be a lot of the sessions that were at that event podcast and would just highly recommend it. The best place to find out, I reckon, about that, I reckon, is probably Flying Fear 2's Instagram account. That's where I get all my information. So, yeah, I'll put a link to that in the newsletter. And there should be a link in these show notes as well. The other very exciting podcast news is that the amazing Sam Tekani and Johanna Cosgrove have started a podcast which is called Rats in the Gutter. It's just stunning. You can get it on Spotify and Apple Podcast, all those podcasting places you can get it. And again, Johanna and Sam are on Instagram, which is often a good place to get news about new episodes. So that is two very exciting new podcasts. Highly recommend. You're about to hear a story by me called Unlocked to Ride, which appeared in Heat. What else do I have to say? I think the only other thing I have to say is that, thank you to everyone who subscribes to my Substack. You can also subscribe to my Substack. It doesn't cost anything, but I'm very grateful to the people who do have paid subscriptions, especially those during that November dry spot. Thank you very much for continuing to contribute. I think that is everything. Thank you so much. And I hope you enjoy this weird little short story. Another weird little short story. Thank you so much. Please Unlock to Ride by Pip Adam. In hindsight, I probably heard the first ones but ignored them. They were probably background to whatever was going on in my foreground and I brushed them off. Maybe it was the microwave. Maybe it was a notification on my phone. A hidden box left unchecked. Something I'd lost interest in, was maybe still paying for. They were sudden noises. when there were only a few of them at the start, the ding 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 or the chugga chug was here and then gone before it fully registered. The flat was not cheap and not really a flat. I was staying in the wide open space of a coffee roastery. I wanted to say it was on the outskirts of town, that I stayed in a studio space on the outskirts of town, but when I tried it out the first few times, it sounded terrible. I wanted it to sound like I was a cowboy of some sort, but it came off sounding like I was a real estate agent. It was hot in the summer and freezing in the winter, and 27 other people lived there. The roastery was a cover for the accommodation rort our landlord was pulling. The whole warehouse was divided with heavy curtains into small rectangular spaces where we all slept in single beds. Every space looked the same and it was hard to tell them apart. Our landlord called them pods, but it was more like a battery. At least once a week, I would walk into the wrong pod and lie down on the wrong bed. I bought a pillowcase with a small kitten and a butterfly on it. This worked for a couple of days, but then someone stole the pillowcase. So when I located it the next night, I was again in the wrong pod. "I think this is mine," I said to Duncan after he told me to get out of his pod. "I don't think so," he said. "Okay," I said, and left, spending about 15 minutes peeking through the gaps and curtains until I found the bed without a pillowcase. Above all, peace was important. None of us had anywhere else to go. Every house in the city was full, every garage, every car, under every bridge. There wasn't a single place left to stay. It was Bethlehem, as far as the eye could see. In hindsight, it's little wonder I didn't hear them to start off with. 27 people make a lot of noise even when they're sleeping. Especially when they're sleeping, and the e-scooters didn't all come at once. Earlier in the year, I had gone to my parents for dinner, and my father was reading his phone. My mother and father had worked hard and were older, so there were only 7 other people living in the rugby club rooms they rented. It was a nice place. Someone had put up screens like people used to have in offices when people used to have offices, so there were no curtains, and there was more space, and people decorated. Occasionally, I'd be visiting and someone would come around the edge of one of the screens, see my parents and say, "Oh, sorry," but it was a very rare occurrence. "What about those electronic scooters?" my father had said, not lifting his head from his phone. My mother had a Bluetooth headset on, so I knew he wasn't talking to her. "Oh," I said, "you rent them," he said, "on your phone." "Cool," I said, "to make short trips." My father drove people around and they would pay a company money and the company would pay him a small amount of this money. He would find out who to pick up and where from by using his phone, which he put in a frame that clipped into the air conditioning vent of what had been our family car. Sometimes he would find himself a long way from the rugby club rooms where he lived and he wouldn't want to drive home without a paying job, so he would park the car and wait, sometimes on the side of the road, sometimes in a car park, and read his phone. When I was small, he told me about the Illuminati. When I was 17, he tried to talk me into buying a seat on an aeroplane that didn't exist and was in fact a pyramid scheme, but I didn't have the $100 it cost. So he asked me to ask the other hairdressers at my work. This was before the hairdressing salon was converted into an aged care facility. My father loved his phone. He often said young people loved their phones too much, but my father loved his phone more than anyone I knew. He also drove people's food to their doors, and sometimes someone would ask him to pick up something else, a jacket someone had left at a party, or a pair of shoes, or a document that had been signed by someone and needed to be signed by someone else. Sometimes people would bring their pets in his car to travel the short trip to their vet, so I could see his concern. Our city is a hilly city, like San Francisco where the scooters had come from, where everything came from. So I said that we lived in a hilly city, and my father said, "It's of no concern to me," because whenever my father is scared, he says brave things that are often also aggressive. My father would fight the scooters with his bare hands if they so much as tried to take the food of people to people's doors or the documents. And if he saw someone on one, he would smack them in the face, carry their unconscious body to the door of his white Prius and drive them to where he thought they wanted to go. A machine had taken his job at the large warehouse, which was now student accommodation, and he would have fought that too if they hadn't taken his swipe card off him as he left on his last day. But now, the robot that picked things off the shelf was out of a job too. "If you wait long enough," he said, as if he was reading my mind, "it all comes around." "Oh," I said, "cool." My mother was ordering food, then on her phone, still talking on her headset, asking someone if they had tried changing the password for their router. Someone would drive our food and their Prius to us, not my father. My father was having a night off because I was visiting for dinner, but I could tell it was hard for him to be paying someone else to bring him our food. The thing with the scooters was they were quiet when they were moving. When I first came into contact with them, it was as they sped past me on the footpath, silently. I was not the least clumsy person I knew or the luckiest. My mother had told me when I was young that what she had really wanted was an abortion, but it was impossible. She only told me once, and I'm sure if I asked her again now, say, she would deny it. But this comment became my core narrative, my origin story. And I spent life with a very real sense that at any moment, and in a snap or some other split-second sound, I would simply cease to exist. The rest of the world would be unchanged. No one would remember me because instead of disappearing, I would have never existed. Some days this made me sad, but some days, like the day Duncan took the pillowcase with the kitten, then denied it was mine, the thought, the not existing, felt like something to really aspire to. This was the soup of my subconscious, the river that ran through me almost unnoticeable, like a stream deep under rock. And I often wondered, when I wasn't sleeping, if this was the cause of my constantly being in danger. I never saw another person suffer the close calls and near misses I experienced with the scooters. When they first arrived, it was as if they lay in wait, just as I was overtaking another pedestrian on the clogged footpaths or stepping round something, they would speed by silently. But, like most things, this was wishful thinking. Soon, and in direct proportion to me looking for it, I saw more and more people jumping out of the way, shouting, and even a few being hit. "Should they be on the road?" Adele asked one day. We worked in a cat grooming salon, and maybe she was right, but I shrugged like I didn't have an opinion, and probably I didn't. Over the months, there were more and more. Another company started, and then another. And before long, it felt like everyone had their faith in the electric scooters, and that was when I started hearing them. One night, at the warehouse, the only bed I could find was against the wall of the roastery. I was freezing because the wall was tin thin, and outside was the cold night air. I couldn't sleep, or wouldn't, because I knew someone would be along any minute to tell me I was in their bed, and I would have to hunt and peck for a new place to sleep. I think I heard the van first, but a van wasn't much. The roastery was in an industrial area and there were always vans. But then the van stopped. A gate opened and then the door of the van slid open and then I heard it. The honking and the beep. And then the quiet, calm voice that sounded a bit like my mother saying, "Please unlock to ride." I listened as they pulled several more of the scooters out of the van, rode them a short distance inside the gate and let them fall onto what sounded like a very small but already existing pile of scooters that had already been dropped off, which I had never noticed, one after the other. Then the van left and it was just the scooters clicking and buzzing, asking each other to unlock to ride. In the chatter, I fell deeply asleep. My phone alarm woke me up and as I turned it off, the honking and the chime was still there, over the sound of the birds, the hum of the motorway falling into line with it, like a sound bed, like it was the new sound bed of our roastery, and I said, "Good morning," to the scooters without thinking. The service industry will do that to you. The bathroom was busy. We jockeyed for space at the mirrors and leaned in and over each other to spit the toothpaste from our mouths. The noise of us was loud, bouncing off the concrete walls of what had surely been designed for three people at a time, maybe four. I listened hard for the scooters, but the bathroom was on the other side of the warehouse and I couldn't hear them at all. It was cold outside. I pulled my hat down over my ears. It was pointless. My glasses formed a gap and the wind blew in, so did the sound of the scooters. Each morning, the few of us who had jobs that couldn't be done from home walked with purpose to the bus stop or to the train. As the others walked past, I stood still and turned back toward the roastery, trying to work out where I'd slept that night, trying to work out which was the other side of the wall I had leaned on. Then I realized I could simply walk around the building and until I found them. So I did. I walked back to the door of the roastery and set off to the left. It wasn't long before I hit a large fence with a container on the other side of it. The sound of the scooters was further away, so I turned back and walked towards it until I hit another fence with barrels piled against it. I looked behind me, but there was no one there, so I searched for a gap in the barrels to look through and found one. I needed to lean way to the right, rest my head hard into the wall of the roastery, but through it I could see them. Maybe 50 scooters piled up, lights flashing, chattering. As I watched, trucks started arriving with more and more scooters. Instead of riding them gently to the pile, these drivers threw them from a distance. Sometimes as they flew, the scooters would call out, still in the calm voice, "Please unlock to ride." As they landed, they would honk, chug-a-chug, angry and helpless as they lay in the pile, prompting more cries from the scooters they had hit or displaced. By lunchtime, there were about 100 of them and the trucks kept coming through the afternoon. Probably from the moment I heard the first van, I knew I was going to climb the fence and visit them. The trucks stopped around 2 in the morning. I'd been there all day, curled up now beside the fence listening. As they lost their charge, the earliest ones to arrive slowed down, adding an alto, then a tenor, then a bass to the conversation that never fully lifted into song, despite the three-note melody of the tones and almost resolved into something like striking clock bells. I was cold at 2 a.m., tired, and I hadn't eaten, so it sounded more and more like they were calling me. The fence seemed somehow lower, and as I listened in to the last truck leave, I felt strong and like if I could get to them, I would be home in some kind of way I had never fully felt. So I climbed the fence, not easily, not with any grace. Once over, I climbed awkwardly down the barrels and stepped onto the pile of scooters, causing several of them to greet me with a honk which, like my father, sounded aggressive but was probably prompted by love. Walking across them was difficult. They shifted under my step and some of them tried to capture me by the ankle. They wanted me to stay that badly. But I was bound for the highest point of the pile where I could look out over them all. Once there, an overwhelming tiredness came over me, and I clicked and chimed, and they clicked and chimed back at me as I lay down and sunk into the pile. The scooters readjusted themselves to nurse me deep within their honk and beat.